This is the Friday, December 7, 2018 version of the Market Analysis segment for Market to Market. The grain markets finished in the green despite calls by commodity traders to be cautious due to the scarce details of the 90-day trade war truce. For the shortened week, by one day to honor the late President George H.W. Bush, March wheat gained 16 cents and the nearby corn contract rose 8 cents. Soybean bulls ignored trade tensions as the January contract bumped up 22 cents. The January meal contract followed along, moving up 70 cents per ton. March cotton added $1.32 per hundredweight. Over in the dairy parlor, January Class 3 milk futures fell 41 cents. The livestock market was mixed. February cattle added $1.03. January feeders shed 85 cents, and the February lean hog contract put on 33 cents. In the currency markets, the U.S. dollar index declined 66 ticks. January crude oil gained $1.68 per barrel on news OPEC will cut output. COMEX gold skyrocketed $26.60 per ounce, and the Goldman Sachs Commodity Index gained more than 9 points to finish at 4:15:30. Joining us now to offer insight on these and other trends is one of our regular market analysts, Ted Seifried. Ted, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me, Delaney.
Ted, I want to start out here as we look at the wheat markets, talking about exports. They were up 89% from the week previous. Yeah. What's going on there? Why do we see such an influx?
Yeah, no, it was a great week for wheat exports. There's countries that are out looking for wheat. Earlier in the week, we saw that Egypt was having trouble getting financing for some of the purchases that they've already made. So there's been some good news and bad news on the export front here this week. But on top of that good export sales number that we saw on Friday, we also had a daily wire reporting number of 240,000 metric tons. So another good sale that we see that we're already in a good start for next week. It's good news for wheat. Wheat reacted very positively to it. We needed this sort of information for wheat. We needed this sort of spark. And so hopefully this will mean more upside potential for wheat if we can keep the export sales rolling.
Will we keep those export sales rolling?
It's a good question. You look at the dollar, it's not really conducive to a whole lot of sales, but we have the best quality wheat in the world. So, we're hopeful of it. I mean, there's a reason why people are buying, and hopefully that will continue.
So Friday's close, especially in the hard red winter wheat markets and the strong export sales, do those two factors give us any indication that we're going to head into a rally or some upward trend?
Well, I mean, if you look at the chart, we've been kind of basing out for quite some time. We're trying to carve out a longer-term bottoming formation. I think we've done that. I think there are a number of fundamental reasons why wheat should be trading higher than maybe it is right now, and a lot of that's been held back by pressure on soybeans and other commodities. If we start to alleviate that, which we have, I think that offers upside potential for wheat, and I do think that there is quite a bit of upside potential for wheat.
How much upside potential, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, in a climate of these sorts of agricultural markets and without really knowing how the chips fall necessarily with China, I'd think 30, 40 cents, 30 to 50 cents or so.
That's not too bad there. Let's talk about corn. We gapped higher at the beginning of the weekend, both March Dece and Dece 18, 19. Mm-hmm. Was that just due to the trade news over the weekend?
Yeah, for the most part. Soybeans had the bigger gap higher, right. And so I think corn was just kind of following along with that. A trade deal with China, in my opinion, is almost a bigger deal for corn than it is for soybeans.
Tell me why, Ted.
Yeah, and the reason for that is because, you know, we've been talking about a huge shift in acreage from soybeans to corn. Well, if we have a deal done with China and China starts buying business as usual again, we're not going to see as significant of a shift in acreage. And in my opinion, the acreage story, or the larger acreage story, is the one thing that's holding corn back from having a really friendly sort of bull market. We've had record caliber production for 5 years in a row, yet we still have declining balance sheets domestically, and I'd say globally as well. I don't really know about the Chinese numbers, and whatever Chinese interior corn is doesn't really matter. They're not importers or exporters. It's a very similar situation to the wheat. So corn's got a good story behind it, unless we plant 93 or 94 million acres of corn. If that happens, well, that certainly kind of puts a big wet blanket on that story. But I don't think that's going to happen for a number of reasons. And if you look at corn spreads, they don't really buy into that either. And the corn spreads right now are probably one of the most friendly indicators when you look at charts and things like that. If you look at the July-December 19 spread at the moment, close today just about 4 cents under. July, only about 4 cents under December. This time last year was 16 cents under. It only made it up to 9 under at its high last year. So those spreads are suggesting that there is some strength to come in corn. It's also suggesting that if you look at December corn's 439 and a quarter high from last year, December corn's high from last year, we should be able to best that by at least 10 cents or so. So,
and is that assuming only if we don't have that 93, 94 million acres?
Look, these spreads trade sort of independent of fundamental news.
Okay.
Or supposedly all the fundamentals are wrapped into how the spreads are trading. This is sort of like technical analysis. It doesn't really matter for what or why. It just, this is what that analysis is saying. I think there are a number of reasons why we could, or why this is doing that, or why the spreads are as bullish as they are. One of them could be a smaller crop than what the trade is currently looking at. I don't imagine that we're going to see demand much stronger than where the USDA is at. They've gotten very aggressive with demand, as they mm-hmm. should have, I believe. But either way, I mean, the spreads think they know something, and that's been going on since about mid last week. Now, the Chinese decision, the idea that we are coming to a truce with China, that's helping that idea because, again, maybe not as many acreage lost from soybeans. Mm-hmm.
Ted, I want to squeeze in this social media question because I know you're an ethanol guru and junkie. We've got a great question here from Lexi Friend. She said, with the ethanol market being at a 13-year low, will these positive export tones help offset those poor margins?
Yes. Okay. Hi, Lexi. It all comes back to China once again, right? So the idea that we're opening up trade with China once again could be a very positive thing for corn, not only for the acreage story, but for the ethanol story. And China's said that they want to push ethanol a lot further. And while apparently, according to them, they have a ton of corn stocks mm-hmm. sitting around, really a large amount of corn, they don't have the production capacity to fill their needs. So one of the ways to help bridge that gap might be U.S. ethanol. And if that's the case, absolutely, I think we're going to see a turnaround in profit margins in ethanol. But like I said, once again, we're all going to depend on what happens with China.
Absolutely. Let's talk about China when we're looking at the soybean markets in particular. Mm-hmm. We've rallied 80 cents from our fall lows.
Yeah.
Is that indeed our fall low?
Oh, I think that's our fall low, yes. But is it going to be the low? And I don't know. We saw very turbulent markets this week, mainly because we are not sure of what the details of this truce
right.
are. We've been told that China is going to start buying massive amounts of U.S. Agricultural commodities mm-hmm. immediately. Well, that sounds fantastic, but what does massive mean and what does immediately mean? Because from the immediacy sense, our window of opportunity for soybean exports is just about 2 months. So immediately needs to mean right now. Otherwise, it doesn't really change the story for this year. And massive, well, massive needs to mean something really very massive. Because if you look at the way the USDA is breaking down our 1.9 billion bushels of exports, as best as I can figure it, they still have at least 12 million metric tons of that going to China. China has purchased not even 500,000 metric tons. So there's another 1.5 million metric tons that needs to be bought by China this year, one way or another. And so if China comes in next week and buys 10 million metric tons of soybeans, yeah, that'll be exciting because it's the first big purchase that we've seen on the books for China in forever. But it only gets us not even quite back to where we need to be to hit the current USDA projection to have a 955 million bushel carryover, or call it a billion bushel carryover. So we need China to come in with a purchase of 20 million, 30 million metric tons. If that happens, that changes the game. If it's just 10 to 15 million metric tons, it doesn't lower the soybean carryover enough to really get excited about sharply higher prices.
Ted, I want to play devil's advocate here just for a second. You
Violence.
Said we needed to see immediate soybean exports. However, we did see pretty good export sales this week, up 42% week over week. Is that indicating to you that China is coming back to the table?
Well, it's interesting what we're calling a good week as far as export sales nowadays, because this week last year we were supposed to be doing 2 million metric tons of soybeans.
So maybe we've adjusted to consider current climate.
Well, it was good versus expectations, right? But our expectations have gotten so low at this point that, you know, it doesn't take much to have a good week. This would be a terrible week in any other year. So yeah. Again, we're 10 million metric tons behind, roughly, where we were at this point last year. The USDA's only got us 160 million bushels lower for our total exports for the entire marketing year. That means we've got a ton of ground that we need to make up very, very soon. Otherwise, our soybean carryover is going to balloon well over a billion bushels. So we need China in. We need to see them make a big purchase of soybeans. But that's all. That's the question of massive. Okay, if 10 million metric tons is massive, it's better than what we were talking about a few weeks ago, and it does suggest that we should see more price recovery, but not that much. The upside should be very limited because it, again, only gets us back to the 955 mm-hmm. million bushel carryover that we're in right now. It doesn't knock that number down. We need a bigger number than 10 million metric tons to see that.
All right, Ted, we might pick this discussion up in Market Plus, but we've got to move on here to discussing the meat markets.
Yep.
Let's start here with the live cattle. We are continuing to see them trade at a premium to the futures.
Right.
Why is that?
Well, no.
The premium to the futures to the cash. Premium of futures to the cash.
The futures are trading a premium to the cash markets.
Yes.
That's correct. Yes, and that's been a limiting factor because, you know, this week we saw small trade at 118. We're kind of stagnant on cash right now. I think that cash eventually has room to go higher. But at
when?
The moment...
Can I ask you when?
And you can, but not right now. For the moment, we've got a lot of stock market uncertainty and volatility. I mean, it was a wild week for the stock market. Monday, we were celebrating the China deal. Tuesday, the stock market was acting like the deal was completely off. We were down sharply. Stock market was closed Wednesday. We reopened Thursday, sharply lower. But by the end of the day, came all the way back and then down again on Friday. Wild. That means demand uncertainty for cattle. It means mm-hmm. consumer confidence uncertainty. And these sorts of things get us a little bit worried about the demand side of the equation. I don't worry. Oh, and that's what makes cash get concerned. So as soon as that sort of smooths out, I think cash has room to go higher. I think domestic demand is going to stay very strong for beef. I think our culture as a whole is moving more towards the idea of animal protein being a wonderful thing for all of us. Delaney, you're a steak-a-day girl. That's fantastic. I eat mostly protein at this point. I mean, all the other stuff is just fillers. We want our protein. For the most part, our stocks, our 401k is doing good. It's going to be the holiday season. We're going to go out and we're going to eat a ton of beef.
What about when you look at international markets, Ted? Is the demand still going to continue to be strong there?
Yeah, I mean, our exports for beef has been solid. This is one of the markets that when we talk about China, it doesn't have a huge impact. It could. I mean, it'd mm-hmm. be great if China were to come in and buy a bunch of our beef, but we don't need it to sustain the balance sheets that we have been comfortable with. So yeah, exports are great, but I really focus on the domestic demand. That's the fundamental driver of the cattle market.
Ted, what about feeders? Where are they heading from here?
Yeah, so feeders, you know, potentially we have a bit of a double bottom now in place. It was a volatile week for feeders as well. I see upside potential for feeders. I am hoping that we do have a bottom in, and if we're going to get a live cattle rally, we need to see it reflected in cash, but feeders need to be the one to lead the way.
Okay. Ted, let's talk about hogs here just briefly. We've also had pretty strong export sales for the month of October. We reached 501.9 million pounds. Do you anticipate us to continue to see those strong exports and domestic demand in the pork markets as well?
Again, you know, domestically, again, as a culture, I feel like we're eating just more protein. I think we have figured out that it is better for us to eat more protein than to eat, you know, the fillers, the breads. I think domestic demand stays very strong. Export demand, though, that is the very interesting thing that has sort of arose or developed in the last couple of weeks. China, even with a 62% tariff, was in 2 weeks ago really quite strongly on the export sales, mm-hmm. Taking about a third of our overall sales, both for this year and next year. We saw them follow up with that this week. If China's going to continue to buy, we've got upside potential.
All right, Ted, we're going to continue that. Sorry to cut you off there, but we've got to get going. We're going to finish that discussion during the Market Plus segment, which you can find online at markettomarket.org. Check us out on Facebook as well, and we will be posting more from our Justice in Agriculture series. Join us again next week when we'll explore one farmer's six-year battle with the USDA over a swamp-busting allegation. So until then, thanks for watching. I'm Delaney Howell. Have a great week.